So, as you said, my name is Luke, Luke Blanchard. I'm married to my wonderful wife, Ashley. It will be almost 3 years this July 23rd. So that is on the record. I do remember still the anniversary date, which is good. And I can honestly say being married to Ashley has been a blast. And aside from, you know, becoming a Christian and coming to know the Lord, I would say marrying her has been the best decision of my life. And unfortunately, it hasn't always been the best, and I would say that's because of me. And because I, for several years before we got married, and then at the start of our marriage, I was addicted to pornography. And just to give you some background, I did grow up in the church. My family went to Reston Bible Church before it was even Reston Bible Church, when it was meeting in Pastor Mike's basement for the Bible study. And so I grew up in the church. I was homeschooled. Yes, some of those stereotypes are true. But my family is just really involved with the church. And I was involved with the youth group. I went to the junior high. I then went to the senior high. I even helped out afterwards. I was really brought up in the church. And unfortunately, you know, that didn't actually stop this from happening. I would say my first run-in with viewing women in an inappropriate manner was actually when I was in middle school, probably, you know, 6 or 7 years old. I went over to my friend's house, and a bunch of friends were over, and one of them pulled out a huge Sears catalog, you know, those big six-inch catalogs that were essentially Sears' website before the internet was around. And they flipped straight to the lingerie section. And, you know, being a very kind of sheltered homeschooler, I didn't really realize. I knew it wasn't right, but I didn't really think anything of it, so I kind of played along with them. So that was, I would say, my first experience. After that, you know, growing up and in high school, it was basically, as some of us were talking at our table, kind of the church of don't do this, don't do that. And my parents meant well, but we never had a conversation, like an active conversation of what was going on in life. I think it was just, you know, we don't talk about it, you know, we don't draw focus to it, and it's not a big deal. But unfortunately, I would encourage you, for those who do have kids and sons who are, you know, even approaching junior high, start talking to them, because I've definitely heard of them. I think the statistic is at age 12 is when kids first find out about it. So have them find out from you as opposed to their 12-year-old friends. Then I went off to college, and it was my first experience in the real world. I by no means went crazy. I didn't drink until I was 21. I got involved with InterVarsity. I was really involved with the ministry there. But I didn't have, as what we've been talking about, the same fences and guideposts to help me out, or guardrails, rather, to help me out and not, you know, go out of bounds. So this is when I actually first really came across pornography. And at first I was really guilty and shocked for seeing that. But eventually, with there not being... Should I just put this down? Is it making a lot of noise? Green mic. There we go. I'll just move my notes over here.
And just hold it nice and close.
Yep, nice and close. So, you know, eventually the guilt and shock kind of went away as I would kind of explore more and more this new freedom. And sadly, I would say that's when my addiction started. I would regularly go to pornographic websites. I found that there are pornographic stories. So, you know, for those of you who think pornography is just an image, it is not. It's definitely in different forms. I went to like video chatting places. I was heavily addicted. And after college, that addiction really consumed me. I was spending probably 45 hours a day just browsing, and I would go to bed super late. My self-esteem really took a dive because of this, and I believe it's directly because of this. I had a lack of motivation. If I had to go anywhere, and if it was like 3 hours from when I had to be somewhere, I would start getting really anxious. I never felt comfortable even, you know, looking at women in the eye anymore. I knew I wasn't doing something right, and I felt really guilty about it. And then Ashley and I started dating after I got out of college. This was several years down the road. And I knew that I was having issues with it, and I told her that I was struggling with lust, and I will be honest, I can't stand that we as Christians say that. I really think it's the church's way of, you know, saying addicted pornography, but not actually say it. So I gave her a heads up, but, you know, unfortunately, I still couldn't get it under control because at this point, it definitely was an addiction. And when we got married, it didn't stop. I wasn't looking at actual pornographic websites, but I would find other ways to kind of get my fix without, you know, going down that road. But I think it was 7 months into the marriage, and I was just so fed up with myself for still continuing to read and look at things that I shouldn't. And I cried out to God one night and just said, please take this from me. I can't do it anymore. And lo and behold, he listened to my prayer, and Ashley actually confronted me the very next morning. I guess she had felt prompted to ask, had I been looking at anything? And I played it off initially of, no, you know, I was lying to myself and trying to believe that lie. No, I wasn't looking at anything that was actually considered pornography, but so I would say, no, I wasn't. But I felt guilty about that and knew, like, hey, I just prayed, God, help me, the night before, and this shows up as an opportunity, so I admitted it. And unfortunately for Ashley, like, I broke her heart. I vowed at our wedding that I would forsake all others, and I really believe this includes pornography and anything like that. And so I told her that and then left to work, and she had to deal with that while I was gone. You know, it breaks my heart to know that I'd done that, and I found out later that she had basically been walking around the neighborhood in our unsafe neighborhood in Arlington at the time because she just was so worried. But basically what happened was God did redeem it, or redeem our marriage, thankfully, and we... Basically, when I got home that night, she had looked up, what do I do when I find my husband's cheating or has been looking at pornography, and she had a list of, I don't know how many questions, and she grilled me, and for like 3 hours or more, we just went over all of this, and I knew if I was going to actually be redeemed and not deal with the addiction anymore, I had to be open and honest. So that was definitely a tough journey. It was a tough first day because all those secrets that I had been thinking weren't really secrets, but trying to handle on my own came out to light. But I can honestly say it's been a huge blessing because, you know, it's really the truth that in the Bible it says the truth will set you free, and that is absolutely the truth, and I said truth a million times just now. But that took about a year and a half before she even got to the point where she could trust me. And Now, Bill's going to talk, and I will kind of do a little follow-up later.
Is that better, Brad? Okay. So I'll have Luke come back on at the very end here, but I want to give you some material that I spend a lot of my days working with this problem. So needless to say, it's much more common than any of us want to believe, and it's growing worse. So here's some obvious statements I think you already knew probably when you walked in here. It's clear that pornography use is powerful. It's reinforcing. It's hard to combat. It's hard to prevent or protect, no matter what guards or safeguards you put in place. It's growing every day. In my mind, pornography is a leading edge in industry, in the internet industry. It's even being looked at by other companies to see how they're, the kinds of advances in technology that they're making in both marketing and how to get around protection and that sort of thing. Many companies, like the phone companies and television companies and hotels, are now being essentially blackmailed into allowing pornography to be easily accessible in their networks or in their industry. So we're in no danger of this thing slowing down. It's contributing to sex trafficking, and so it's a worldwide epidemic. And as loud as the culture is speaking, most of us feel like the church is pretty quiet, and in part because the church is awkward talking about it and trying to teach truth and incorporate both grace and conviction into their message. So we know it's powerful. It's chemically reinforcing, if you don't know that. Once somebody begins to get wired for pornography, male or female, it begins to be an addiction in a classic disease sense, that it's actually hard not to keep returning to the source because your brain has become adapted to it. So that's part of what makes it difficult. Some people really do benefit from medication, surprisingly, and lots of different forms of treatment. We're not going to get into that here, but it's obvious that it's growing, it's chemical, it's addicting. It's not always progressive. That's one of the things that's often said, that once you get into it, you're going to get into worse and worse forms. That certainly can be true. It's not always true. it is, my favorite simple description is, it's a kind of false intimacy. It's a way to have a fantasy relationship that does not require anything of either the male or the female. And if you don't know this, there's a growing increase, a rapidly growing increase among females being addicted to pornography. And as Luke indicated, it's not just visual, it's not just chat rooms. There are people that are addicted to stories, to there's a variety of different elements. It's like a shopping mall. Once you get into the world of pornography, there are literally thousands of forms and types, and any particular fantasy you have, there's probably sites and material available, and it's feeding itself. And that's part of why, even as a culture, it's frankly quite difficult to control. so those are the obvious things. Less obvious. Pornography use is often quite symbolic. So what somebody who's experienced in looking at pornography begins to look at over time, they begin to have something that is, that speaks or touches some part of them that is meaningful for some reason, usually unknown what the reason is, but it's usually relevant what someone is looking at. It usually points to some part of their story, often the origin of the pornography or the origin of the choice to pursue pornography. And it sometimes represents some unfinished or unresolved relational issue or pocket of shame or guilt, something from the story, and this becomes the first form of relief or comfort, first way that someone soothes themselves for something that's happened. It's not just that porn is enticing, particularly for males, of course it is, but the choices that a man or woman makes of what they repeatedly go after tends to relate to their their story in some way. And they can often feel sort of childlike, meaning that it's a developmental issue, what it's pointing back to. It's often a message. When the pornography addiction begins, there's often a message for someone at that point in their life, either God or someone who has failed them or hurt them in some way. So it's important, if you get into the history, to begin to look at the developmental story and what the early messages and responses and reactions to the use were. Obviously, it's not hard to imagine that shame and guilt and fear and cowardice, all those kinds of things begin to pile on, which then makes it harder and harder to confess it, et cetera. I think Jason really wanted this covered here because he knows it's a secret issue in the church, even in a group like this. And one of the reasons men in particular don't talk, they don't confess, they don't go to their wives, obviously they're ashamed and they're afraid of the conflict, and most men will tell themselves the lie, it's not going to help, it's going to make things worse. More common, my wife is not going to understand. And most men, if they're honest, feel like their wife is only going to be hurt, devastated, and it's going to set the marriage back in a way that they don't know how to recover from. So, I want to give you a simplistic look at the average wife's response to their husband revealing that they have a problem or an issue with pornography, whether it's infrequent or frequent, and obviously it makes a difference how bad it is and how extensive it is. But a fair number of clients on the far right there, probably I'd say 5 to 20% of the women who find out, and of course it depends on whether the husband confessed and told or whether they discovered. And by the way, lots of stories where women just pray that if something's going on, that the Spirit would reveal to them that something's going on. So I have lots of uncanny stories. Again, you can't bank on this, but lots of uncanny stories about women being woken up in the night or their husband leaves for a trip and something, the Spirit tells them, check the history, go searching around. So a lot of women, because they're much more alert to things that are threatening to the marriage than men typically are, at least in my experience, you can sometimes have that inkling. Again, you're going to have a tendency to also not want to look because you don't want to know. But if you pray, Lord, reveal to me what's threatening our relationship, the Spirit may speak to you. So you may have to become a detective. So whether or not the man confesses or you find out, 5 to 20% of the women just freak out. They take it to the extreme. They feel like they have been cheated on, betrayed, and their response is certainly hurt and disappointment, but it's immediately blended with anger and a sense that their world has come to an end. And so they have this drastic overreaction. They begin to fill in all the blanks, make lots of assumptions about what this means, about what the message to them or about them is. And they quite normally move into accusation mode and ultimatum mode. So in essence, the message at this stage is, you better do something to fix this or else. And what they really mean is, you better do something to wind the clock back and get me my innocent trust back, or else I'm never going to forgive you or we're never going to recover from this. And because men fear that response, that's a lot. I'm not excusing men not talking, but that's a lot of why men don't talk, is because they're afraid of that reaction. I certainly understand. We'll talk in a minute about why does a woman go there? And it has to do with a woman's theology and what this triggers in the way a woman thinks. But fair percentage of women, this is a reaction. It is extreme. You can hear me saying it. It is extreme. Second, most common in the middle of the bell curve, the most common reaction, and I want to say this is anywhere from 20 to 90% of the women, handle this with just deep hurt and disappointment and a sense of despair and concern about how the marriage is going to recover, how they're going to regain trust and hope of any kind, and how they're not going to become one of those couples that has this fractured intimacy that's been ruined by pornography. So it may not feel like adultery or that kind of extreme betrayal, but it certainly feels irrecoverable. It certainly does not feel redemptive or like God is going to do something powerful because of this revelation. It just feels hopeless. And that doubt and despair can become a dominant theme The distrust just plants itself and becomes a wedge there, where I can't ever trust you, and I can forgive you at one level, but not at some deep level. Very rare is the far right reaction, and I want to say 1 to 5% of the women that I have worked with or experienced respond this way, where they, of course, are hurt and disappointed and afraid for the marriage and themselves. But after that initial shock, their real pain is for their partner. Their real concern is for what must be going on with their husband, or in the case that it's a woman, or their wife, that they are being drawn to this source. And so they, if genuine empathy comes, there's a whole lot of difference you can tell between asking your husband, why are you doing this? Versus, why are you doing this? What's going on for you? What's happening inside you that's making you need to go here? Just this past week, a couple that's only been married probably 10 years, and he felt convicted to confess to his wife, and she works at a church, not this church, but another church, and he had been putting it off for a long time, but the Spirit kept convicting him that you need to tell your wife. And he went to her. They were on a weekend getaway. That's a weekend to remember. Anyway, so they're on a weekend getaway, and they were praying, and he just said, I need to tell you something. And she said, okay. And he confessed, and she just put her hands on his hands and said, oh my gosh, of course I forgive you, and I love you, and I'm with you in this, and whatever you need to do, tell me what's going on. Tell me why this is what you went after. Now, I'm not putting that out there as the norm. It is not the norm. Nor am I trying to preach to every woman in the group that that's what you ought to be. I just want you to be aware that there is a way to get there to where your real response is one of grace, and seeing this as a threat to the marriage and a threat to your husband, not principally a threat to you as a woman or as the wife. But it takes some work to get there, obviously. So, comment. How men see pornography? This is the simplest thing I can say. This is a cheap way to put it, but there's a difference between male morality and female morality, particularly with regard to this. Most men see pornography use as a misdemeanor. What I mean by that, think of any misdemeanor that you've committed. Most of us in the room have committed misdemeanors, meaning, like I just did one earlier this week, where I just cross a street when I don't have the little walk signal. And that technically is jaywalking. All of us speed. All of us do things that according to the police or the courts, are misdemeanors. My point here is men see pornography, they tend to see it as a misdemeanor. That doesn't mean they don't think it's horrible and shaming and guilt-inducing, but they do see it as incredibly common and hard to avoid. And so they see it, and they do not see it generally as a betrayal of the relationship, as infidelity, as adultery. They are shocked if their wife plays the divorce card, like, this, I consider this adultery, so I have the right to divorce you on grounds of adultery. When I've had husbands hear that response, they look at the wife like, what planet are you from? How can you be applying the scripture to this? Again, that's just revealing, again, this is simplistic, but just revealing that the way men think about this, often because men, all of their friends have struggled with it, for many, especially younger men, they've been dealing with it for quite some time, and they know it's incredibly common. It's in sitcoms and movies. Unfortunately, females are now being raised, I think, to just be immune to it, or just to expect it, or not be offended or shocked by it. There's a good and a bad in that, obviously. But for men, they just see it that way. It doesn't mean that they don't take it seriously. It just means that they don't think it warrants the kind of response of the women to the sort of the right of the center there. The reason men say they do it is for release or comfort or escape or a sense, some fantasy that I'm engaging in a piece of life that's not making me feel bad about my inability to perform, not sexually, but just perform adequately as a man. So this is an escape. It's obviously incredibly powerful, a reinforcement. I mean, sexual arousal is very rewarding chemically. But if you get at the core of it, most men are going because they feel inadequate or ashamed, or they're avoiding some aspect of life, and they're trying to get relief or comfort, or if the fantasy is that you can escape your responsibility as a husband or a man. Again, do good men filled with the Holy Spirit, know this is not helping me, this is driving me back? Yes. And so then they go into the guilt and shock stage that Luke spoke of, but eventually they go into a numb stage, and then it's kind of the double life stage. And it becomes difficult because they're just ashamed to say, this is what I struggle with, because it feels so common and so mundane that you're struggling with something so basic as this. How do women see the problem? And the way I think of this is this problem, when a woman finds out about it, they kind of go into different rooms in their head. Female morality, of course, most of the females I work with see this as a felony, not as a misdemeanor. They don't understand. Again, a felony is something you intentionally, that's a law you intentionally try to break that has serious consequences. And that is how the average woman that I work with, at least, sees pornography use, especially if it's routine. Most of them don't understand the chemical part. They don't understand the developmental part. They don't understand the male psychology or how men are looking at this. So, of course, the natural reaction is to think, this is a principle statement about me as a woman, me as your wife, me as a sexual partner, me as a female object. And so they're either angry, ashamed, competitive, hurt, crushed, disappointed, all of that sort of thing. And they go into rooms where they begin to think either angrily about their spouse or angrily about themselves or the culture or the church, but all that energy takes them into rooms where they're basically building a case. That's what I mean by, in the extreme example, all of the blanks are filled in an accusational way, meant to go somewhere to make someone pay for what has happened to their relationship and the trust that they wanted to have and the innocence and naivete and protection that they wanted to have in their marriage. They think the reason he does this is because the husband is rejecting them, or because he's a coward, or because he's perverse, or because he doesn't get enough sex, or he thinks about sex too much. In other words, they think a lot of dark, negative, judgmental thoughts about their husband without particularly necessarily knowing the story or knowing anything of the origin or where this whole thing began. And they take it very personally. And of course, they feel hopeless and to some degree powerless. I can't compete with pornography or, you know, the so-called airbrushed women or whatever it is you're looking at. And you can imagine if what they find out is my husband. I have lots of cases where what the man looks at is to women, or what the man looks at is homosexual, male homosexual pornography, or in worst cases, child pornography. So obviously, what your husband is looking at does make a difference. But if you were full of grace and truth, if you were ideally responding in a Christ-like manner, that's just relevant data. Why are you looking at that? What is that what you're looking at? And by the way, the odder it is, the more likely it ties back to the story in some way. That's a bare notion to tell you there's something hopeful in the weird things. But the weirder it is, the more likely, in my mind, it's symbolic. The more common it is, what you females might expect men would look at, the more at least you get the sense of, okay, at least this is normal porn. That doesn't mean it's not symbolic or relevant, but it may just be that they're trapped in the sense that all men have been taught to look at the female body as a sexual object and sexually arousing events as something titillating. But when your mind goes after more particular forms, it means there's something historical going on. All right, I want to pull the Ephesians 5 passage up. I guess I'm doing that. This is from the Message, and I want us to hear this way. Watch what God does, and then you do it like children who learn proper behavior from their parents. Mostly what God does is love you. Keep company with him and learn a life of love. Observe how Christ loved us. His love was not cautious, but extravagant. He didn't love in order to get something from us, but to give everything of himself to us. Love like that. Don't allow love to turn into lust. setting off on a downhill slide into sexual promiscuity, filthy practices, or bullying greed. One of the things, obviously this applies to pornography, but I want you to play with this word. In the NIV it says, have nothing to do with sexual immorality or with impurity or with greed. And what I want to point out here is that the typical woman's response is also lustful. That woman, what a woman is lusting after in her normal response is innocence or no conflict or no pain or nothing to have to work through. It's natural, of course, to want that badly, but that's what lust is wanting something good to an extreme. And so this passage in Ephesians doesn't just apply to men lusting after something sexually. It also applies to men lusting after no conflict, no hassles, no repercussions, no consequences, and it relates to females also lusting after something. So this is in the NIV. So be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise. And that's part of why I wanted to talk about this in the boundary sense. If you respond in the flesh to this, either as the perpetrator or the receiver of the confession, there is an unwise way to respond to this. There is a fleshly way to respond to this, and it does great damage to the marriage and the intimacy. So unfortunately, both parties are responsible for this passage, for how to respond to this in a loving, wise manner. If you want something, this is an odd parallel in the female world. It's the closest I can come to giving women a more natural empathy for this. And it doesn't quite compare, and I'm sure you're going to react at one level and say, yeah, right, this is no comparison. But it is something at least gives you a taste of this. Most women I know, and I'm assuming this is true for a lot of you, for quite some time have thought a lot about, potentially obsessed about, one thing in your world that can compete with the sexual in the male world. And that is body image, appearance, weight, anything having to do with female presentation. The amount of time or energy, the natural way in which you think about what you look like, how you compare to other women, the amount of time you look at makeup, hair, fashion, clothing, jewelry, whatever. The amount of time you have obsessed, if that's a fair word, about your female appearance, for a lot of women, they recognize, if they're honest, that's kind of out of whack. They think about it a lot more than they want to or should. And in the same way that men, I think, fantasize that in heaven, all of this battle with lust is going to be over, I think women, if I can hazard a guess, one of the things you'll be grateful for in heaven is, I don't have to worry about that anymore. I don't have to think anymore about my appearance and what I look like and how I compete. Again, shallow comparison perhaps, but if it begins to give you a taste, if you know how often you think about things or notice other women or notice anything having to do with appearance, it may give you a little bit of empathy for how often a man thinks sexually. That's part of how the culture and how we're wired in some way. Last thing I want to give you. My mentor, Dr. Crad, early on gave all of us in counseling a simple tool to use when you're looking at someone that you're counseling or relating to. And it was just this idea of use glasses and think of the two lenses. So when you're looking at someone, particularly as they're revealing something to you about their life or their struggles, on one lens, you're looking at their wrong strategies, what we would just call sinful behavior, but you're looking at how they're trying to make their world work, how they're trying to achieve what it is they're after. The other lens, he said, look at their deep longings. And what he means is every sinful behavior at its core, even Satan's choices, have some kind of longing for something that's missing. And in many cases, what humans long for has a legitimacy to it. So even someone who's a pedophile is longing for some kind of impact, some kind of relational effect on another human being that he was born with or she was born with. Obviously, you pair it with wrong strategies and you come up with pedophilia. But the source of empathy is in trying to understand what's the longing beneath the behavioral choice. So his point was, you want to try and look at someone with both lenses. Some of us, the people of the gift of mercy, find it much easier to look at the longing side. Those of us who are harsher or more judgmental or whatever are going to look at the wrong strategy side. So you want to emphasize sort of the side of the lens that you're not as good at. Here's one more way to put it, and then I'll have Luke come back up for a couple minutes. We may not have much time for questions. Sorry about that. This is the hardest question, but the thing I hope you remember most. when this comes out, this little grid, the first question I would ask a woman is, when your husband reveals this, either you find it or they confess it, do you have empathy for them? And to the husband, when you reveal this, do you have empathy for your wife? In other words, do you know how she's responding to this? Can you understand why she's going off the deep end or why she's so hurt? Your hope of God using this depends first on this ability to have empathy for what the other person is going through. On the other side, do you have conviction not for their sin, that's the easy part, but for your sin? And the women I've seen handle this well either recognize this is fundamentally not about me. It's affecting the marriage, of course, but it's not about me. Can it be? Yes. Can it bring to the surface conflict? I don't mean that the marriage is not a part of the story. but the emphasis here is on, can I look at my own wrong strategies and what I'm longing for here, as well as look at what you're longing for and your wrong strategies? And this is what I see sorely missing in this conversation from both parties, the inability to have empathy for the other and conviction for their own sin. So Luke, if you come back up and... again, we need to be out at 10 after, right? So, okay. Well, you may only get one question, and that's probably just going to be, what did this make you think about? So...
finish off. I told you guys about the whole journey beforehand and kind of started on how we were dealing with things afterwards. And I can honestly say that God has redeemed me from the addiction, which has been such a huge blessing, knowing that Ashley knows everything about me and vice versa. This ended up opening a really great dialogue between us. Just allowing us to deepen our marriage, but also, I mean, I never want to go back to being that way. And we've taken a lot of steps to make sure that never happens again. It started with the grilling, and then that led to just us doing things like having a web blocker on there. I know some people say that there are web blockers that can be gotten around, and I'm sure if you really, really are technologically savvy, you can, but the one we have is called Covenant Eyes, and it is great. It actually sends a report of the web browsing to whatever email account that you have. So ours is actually sent to our joint email account. So if you want to make sure you're on the straight and narrow, make sure your wife has that report, because that was one thing that helped me, knowing that Ashley would see everything that I would be doing. Another thing is, I thought about this, but I totally forgot. We're going to bed at the same time. I don't stay up super late anymore. One, it's helped me just get better sleep, but two, it takes away that ability for me to just get online and sneak around. Initially, and one thing that really helped me break the addiction was essentially, aside from doing anything for work, we had me just get off the internet, period, for about a month. And if you guys did the practice of no devices for a day, it is tough doing it for a month, but it's doable. And my marriage to Ashley, it was more than worth it, just making sure that, you know, we kept it solid. We also have a joint email account so that if anything comes in, she can read it. And my old, now junk email address, you know, everything gets forwarded to this email account. If we're talking or corresponding with a married couple, I only write to the husband and Ashley will respond to the wife, just so, you know, we have those fences and guard posts or guardrails. Another big thing is Ashley has the passwords to the App Store for my iPad and iPhone, just because you wouldn't think it necessarily, but there is just a ton of stuff out there that even not even trying to look for inappropriate images, they're all over. And I would say I've heard that, at least when I've talked to some other men, they say, well, I need this in case I need to download something. And I honestly believe that is kind of a justification to not take every step they can to keep their marriage intact. Yeah, it's not fun to lose that freedom, but at the same time, it's a lot more fun knowing that, you know, you're keeping your marriage intact. Yeah, I've got a bunch more. We went through all of the old DVDs, like if anything had a sex scene, get that out, because we don't need to be looking at that. If there are movies that we want to watch, we look it up on this website called Plugged In or Common Sense Media, and it allows us to see if there's anything inappropriate in the movie. And if we can't find a review, we don't watch it. So movies at the library don't always have reviews, and so we don't always watch them. But basically, I've got several more of these, and if any of you guys ever want to talk with me about it, that'd be great. I would love to help you out. I just hope this is an encouragement to you. Husbands, if you've struggled with pornography, and I can pretty much guarantee you have, I just want to let you know it is possible to be redeemed. And wives, I want to encourage you that, you know, your husbands can be redeemed as well. And I would really encourage you to talk to them about it, even if it's like just asking them how they're doing, just so that, you know, if with your kids you want to have that conversation, it's even more important to have that conversation with your spouse. So that's just what I want to leave you guys with, is that God can and does redeem.
All right. Great job. Thanks, Luke. Sorry, I'm playing double duty here. Well, thank you again to Luke and Bill as well. Just a round of applause for Bill. So just a reminder, we record all the sessions here at Homefront, but this one especially we did. So, you know, there's a lot of information, a lot of great insights today. If you want to review that, you can. And if your husband's not here, or your spouse is not here, it's a great way to review together. Let me pray for us. I think we'll just close out and leave the questions for a later point. Dear God, we thank you so much for being here in this place today and allowing us to openly talk about this really important topic. And God, we thank you for Luke and Ashley especially being willing to share their story and do so in such a hopeful way. God, we recognize that this is a topic of spiritual warfare and that the enemy would love nothing more than to infiltrate our marriages and to knock us off the course with something so powerful as this. And God, I thank you also for the insights that Bill shared about how this affects both sides of the marriage and how we can be aware and alert and be equipped to deal with it. And I just pray that this morning's topic would be a conversation starter for many. And I pray that it would be a strengthener for the marriages in this room, for this group as a whole, and for this church and for your kingdom. So we pray for the marriages here this morning. We thank you so much for allowing us this platform to talk about a topic like this. And we just pray that you would help us all to find ways to strengthen our marriage with you in the center. And we ask all this in your son's name. Amen. Thank you all. Have a great morning.